there is progression, you know? It might not be where you thought it was going to be, but it's happening. And as long as you put out the energy, I'm a big proponent on, like, if I send out into the world this energy of I'm going to be something, or I'm going to, you know, or if you even have a specific, like, my art's going to be in a museum. You have those, like, inner, like, voices, and you put it out there, right? And I think the world will respond. You know, I really do. I think that if you keep telling yourself, you know, and you believe it, that it's going to go somewhere and your art's going to touch somebody or a lot of people, it will happen. It just hasn't happened yet.
Welcome to the Passionate Painter Podcast. I'm your host, Caroline Italia Carlson. Whether your art is a full-time career or your side gig, if you are passionate about creating art, this podcast is for you. Don't worry about taking notes. I'll do that for you. And you can find them at PassionatePainterPodcast.com. Welcome to part two of my interview in progress with American painter Jacob Bartanis. If you haven't yet listened to part one, you might want to go back to listen to that first to hear Jacob's bio, his origin story, and get lots of inspiration. Part one is available now at PassionatePainterPodcast.com. /episode 81. I'm happy to announce, as promised, in addition to my full master class, The Portrait Code, 7 new Spotlight courses are now available for targeted training in design, composition, perspective, color theory, and anatomy, as well as a standalone portrait painting demonstration. I've had requests for those who only want the targeted training to pull these out of the master class so that they can be available individually if desired. As always, they're available at incredible prices because I want them to be accessible. You can check them out and see course content by going to PassionatePainterAcademy.com. One of the things I love about your work is there are so many levels to your work. I mean, you've got the playful level, you've got the satirical level, that I think is present in a lot of the work, where you're making a commentary and it's definitely something more serious. And, you know, you've got a view. It's not just random. And then there's like a little bit of a dark layer sometimes in there. It's kind of like this little undercurrent,
right?
Where you're struggling with something internally. At least this is my view of your work. It's got like at least 3 layers, I think, per painting.
it's very thick in layers.
But, and it's interesting. There's a lot to be able to say about it.
Okay, like the painting, I don't know if you can see it. Can you see it behind me? The one right here, up in this area right there?
Yep.
Okay, so like that painting, that came from like, I listened to, I don't know if you know who he is, but he's a critique, he's a Jerry Saltz. Have you ever heard of that name?
No, I'll look him up.
Oh my God, he's funny and just a lot of things I disagree with, but that's normal. But anyways, I really like listening to him. And he started talking about these caves, the cave wall, you know, the art inside the caves, the very beginning of where it all started, you know.
Yes, let's
and
go.
Like he was like, this is like this is like real art. This is like the earliest forms of like man, you know, how they studied animals and human beings and you know, and I was very interested in that. And at least in theory, and I was like, well, what's a cave for me? And I was like, I think graffiti art is. I think graffiti art is the cave of our time. And like, it's like an urban setting, and like people would draw on the walls and on buses. It doesn't matter, trains. And I was like, and they're voicing their opinion. And so I was like, man, I got to make this like, so on that painting, you'll see like the red on the side of it. So, and then the rest of it would be the cave, right? And then the figure behind it is kind of like moving the cave. And then what's behind it is modern art. So he's moving it to see another painting. So behind that is just a solid red painting. And that's where we are today. But where we were was in this like, then I put my handprints on there to symbolize that this is a cave wall. And then I have like this honorable mention for Keith Haring there, looking down on his phallus and screaming. Because during that time you had, you know, AIDS in the 80s, because that's where graffiti came from, the 70s and 80s, and there was a lot of sexual confusion on that topic. Even gay people were afraid of sex and their own bodies, and even, you know, it goes round. It's just it's a heterosexuals and homosexuals. We all feared it, you know, and the media called it gay cancer and things like that. And like, I think graffiti artists especially had a interesting way of documenting history, you know, and they're not noticed, but I think they should be. I think they, and I went to Chicago for the first time and I seen these subways go by with graffiti art on it. And I just couldn't help but look, you know what I mean? It's like, it's like, bam, in front of your face. You know?
I love it.
You don't have an option. You have to take it, you know, even the tagging, like people would say, like, you know, not the pretty pictures, but where people would just sign their name. You know what I mean? Even if you hate that, you're still confronted with it, you know? And I was very interested in that. So behind them, you have like this abstract kind of line going on. I don't know if you can see that with markers. And that's basically my interpretation of tagging. And then you have the train above them. I'm going to be putting graffiti art on that train. And then I do this thing where I put in these blocks. Like you can see these white blocks. This painting just started, but it's not going to be white blocks. But I do this kind of thing where I'm putting like an abstract thought in each block. Like maybe I'll put like a mailbox in there. You know what I mean? And like just get your eyes thinking about like, how does that story connect with the overall general story of the painting? So it's still abstract, even though it has a subject in it. And I like the abstract thought more than I like the actual visual abstraction kind of thing.
Wow. Yeah. There's a lot for you to talk about. I think you should keep talking about your work. And you're going to have to send us that picture when it's done so I can put that on your show notes page too.
Oh yeah. I would love that. But hold on. So there's a, am I allowed to do this? Are you okay
yeah,
with this?
Yeah, whatever you want.
So there's a painting right here. Can you see that?
Yep.
So this one, the Abe Lincoln one, there's a lot of like political, I would say like little notes inside that painting. I talk about like gun rights. I talk about the vaccine. I talk about, so I want to do a bunch of paintings based on like every little meaning inside that painting. So these are like, these come off of that painting basically. And this is about gun rights in a way. So, you know, you got Look Daddy, I've Shot a Big One, which I got from Roy Lichtenstein. Have you ever heard of that
artist? Yeah.
So yep. He started with Look Mickey, I Hooked a Big One, right? So I put like a hashtag up there and you can barely see the word shot, but it's inside the hashtag. And it you know, it could be read as Look Daddy, I've hashtagged a big one, or Look Daddy, I've you know, I've shot a big one, or even in a sexual way, it could be read as Look Daddy, I have a big one.
Oh,
you
yeah.
know? And like, you know, I think that's important. Someone pointed that out to me and they were like, you should take that away, or and like I was like, no, I don't think I want to now that you pointed out. I think it's great because, you know, when it comes to guns and things like that, people aren't talking about like why people are getting hold of guns and doing violent things. And I think sexual abuse is one of those things and it should be talked about more. So people should be aware of those things. And I think that's great. If you see that in the painting, I think that's awesome that you've seen that. And I want to keep it there. I want your mind to be fixated out. And then I add these, like, I don't know, I'm not going to put the camera back on it, but I add these like little things, like a pack of cigarettes and is in the painting, and the collar to a priest. There's a lot of sexual abuse in churches and things like that where people don't talk about those things. And like, but that's the abstract thought, right? So the cigarettes are more of like this vision of like masculinity and history, like where men would have the cigarettes and they would roll them up in their sleeves. And like, it's a, you know, playing with gender roles basically in this painting, like feminine and masculine sort of like objects. And then I have like the Van Gogh flowers, the sunflowers at the bottom. And like, it's like juxtaposed with the figure on the side with the green toy soldier. And like, this is one of those moments where I was like really excited because Van Gogh, he's known for like using like primary colors and being very, his perspective and his work is really awesome. Like the way he, like, you can see depth without any shade or really deep shading or anything like that. You can still see it. There's a play on that. And like, I was like, wow, I'm really doing kind of the same thing. It kind of happened that way. But in the flowers, I'm using a bunch of yellow. But before I did the vase with Van Gogh, I did the toy soldier and I did yellow ochre in the background. I was like, is this color right? Like I questioned it, right? And then like when I did the vases with the flowers, I was like, it's perfect. Like, it's like, I'm going to turn it again. Sorry.
Yeah. You know, you're going to have to send a picture of this one too.
Oh yeah. So I was like, they're like playing off of each other. You know what I mean? Like the colors, it's sort of the same setting. And then those two figures right here are playing as well with the background that's behind them, you know? And then I have sort of like this left-sided issue with gun rights and this right-sided issue. So I have the deer up there that's pointed right there with the, you know, And that the argument can be said that, like, guns aren't used for violence. Guns are used for hunting and survival. And you know what I mean? And like, it's a deep rooted American tradition to have a gun. And I try to play on not just the liberal side of the issue, but also the conservative side as well, because we all have a voice and an opinion on things. And it's not fair for me to ignore the voices of others. So I like the Lincoln painting. That painting, I tell people, you know, I have a lot of people look at it and they're like, yeah, those, you know, the liberals are getting away with everything. Or they'll be like, oh yeah, the conservatives are, you know, and then it's always, you know, and I'll be like, I painted this for everybody, not just one side. You know what I mean? So if you think the painting's for you, you're wrong.
And if you think the painting is for you, you're right.
All right. It's for everybody. I paint it. I want people to like confront the opposing side of their political nature and like try to come to terms with the other side and try to like work together, because I think that's what's missing, is that we don't talk enough to each other and try to like learn, because I think you can learn a lot from talking to the other side.
So your paintings really are kind of three-dimensional in a way. It's like you're, you know, they say if you go too far in one direction, you come back around to the same point.
Right.
And it seems like when people get too extreme on either side, they get more similar, and your paintings really are about integration.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, that's really cool. So I was just curious how you get to your pricing, because our listeners would probably be curious how you value, how do you do it?
Well, first I think to myself, I was like, this is a new career, even though like I've been like painting for as long as I can remember drawing. I try to think of it as like, where did I start off making and any other job in my life, and what paid the bills, like what kind of like yearly salary. And like, I was like, well, I got to make at least this amount to survive, right, per year. So I said, okay, well, I'm going to price it based on that. So I was like, well, what would fit for that? So I was like, well, I price it by 3.4 times a square inch. That's what that my paintings are. And they come out to be around $10,850 for these 5-foot by 4-foot kind of thing. And I comfortable in that pricing because I feel like it's fair for me first, and really fair for whoever buys it, because my name's not out there. So that's how I basically arrived at it. I from a real world perspective of like trying to just survive and live.
Well, and I love that you said earlier that having your current work that you do driving enables you to set your prices where you feel they need to be without negotiating the prices down against yourself. You know, some people will bargain their prices down to a client. They'll knock their own prices down just because they're so self-conscious, or they're, God forbid, desperate that they've got to make a sale. Right. And so it is an interesting and valid point that for you, and it currently for me as well, having another source of income does provide that stability where you don't feel that you have to really justify your pricing.
Right. I also tack on any additional. So the painting itself is 3.4. But I also put on, like, if I go get it framed, I double the price of the framing, because it's more than just getting the frame, like purchasing, making that purchase. You're taking your own time and selecting the frame, so to speak. I don't just like get it done. I actually partake in like going to see the process of it. So I'm like very much into getting everything settled. It's all like mapped out for me, in order to like to get, make sure it looks really cohesive and nice. So your time is precious, and it's probably the most important thing that you don't realize. So I tack on, if the frame is 800, I put, you know, it's 1600 on top of the total price. So any additional kind of thing, if I have to travel, let's say I map my, like my miles, and I charge for like per mile, like what would, you know what I mean? Like I'm just thinking realistically. And then I put that on it as well. These are quite large paintings, so I have to do things to keep them safe during that process. And like nobody would get free shipping basically on something this large. There's things that you have to do in order to keep them, you know, safely arrive at a destination. So anything that's like extra outside of just having the bare canvas, right, it has to be on top of that price. It has to, because you're not paying yourself for that time. So, and I think that's important that you have to do that.
I think that's extremely important. I'm glad that you mentioned that. And I include that in my advice as well within my formula, where I say, you know, when it comes to the time element of an hourly amount, whatever the hourly amount is, I recommend tracking your time so that you can give people estimates if they want something created. And B, so that you are aware of your overhead. For instance, if you go to ship something, track your time, not only your mileage to the shipping place, but track your time. You had to take an hour out of your day, maybe, like you said, that you can't get that back. And tell me now, you said examples, say $800 to frame your paintings.
Mm-hmm.
Do you frame them all ahead of time, or do you wait until you have a buyer and ask them, do they want a white frame?
I frame them as soon as they're done.
You do? Oh, and yes. To what you feel is, yes. So you're not worried about matching someone's house. You're saying, no. I'm making this frame for this piece of art.
Correct. Yes.
Okay. So that's overhead for sure.
Yeah. The frame is part of the piece. So, and they're all white framed regardless. I think it's just, it's part of me. So the framing is very important. I think it ties in. It's like the blanket on the bed, you know, and it's very important to have the blanket on the bed. And I think that, you know, the artist should be the one to choose. I have free, like I said, I want to be totally free in my art. I feel more comfortable in selecting the frame. And if I think that a frame, the wrong blanket could look wrong on the bed, and it could throw the painting off. And I just don't want that to ever happen. And I think the best for me, white frames do my paintings justice very well.
I like that. Okay, so talk to me about your creative process. I mean, I'd love to hear about how, for instance, we talked about how many layers there are in each piece, right? And there's so mm-hmm. much going on, and each one really is an integration in a lot of instances, opposing views mm-hmm. of a particular subject. How do you work out your paintings ahead of time in a sketchbook? Do you have a methodology for, do you just wake up in the night with an idea for a painting, or like, how do you do this?
Can I say all of the above?
Yes.
Yeah, because all of the above. But my process is, I'm leaning into the computer like an old person, like you can't hear me. Like,
yes.
Can you hear me? Anyways, I have this. I'm trying to look for it around the room. Anyways, but you'll know what I'm talking about. I have an iPad, and they say that in order to make a masterpiece, which I that's up to, you know, the public to view whether or not you're doing that. But one day I hope to achieve that sort of like goal. But they say it's all planned out. In order to make a master, you have to plan. You know what I mean? There's like a whole bunch of like do's and don'ts in this. But I don't necessarily believe in that 100%. So I do what I call the in-between. So I'm very process-oriented, but I'm also the other side as well. So what I do is I start out making what I like to call an ugly drawing. So this is just a quick, like, you know, when you're like, just, you don't think about it. You're just like, just sketching really fast, getting the idea onto the paper, basically. And it could, sometimes my drawings come out looking like a kindergartner did it. And I'm like, I don't care, but the idea, I know what it is. So then I take that drawing, and then I, in my head, I try to render it even a little bit better on the canvas, right? And then when I, as I'm going through my process and I'm putting the paint on there, I take my iPad and I take a picture of the painting, and then I go on Procreate, which is a thing on your iPad that you can use. And then I work in like what I want and where I want it from the iPad. And then I use that as a reference. And then I put that on the canvas. And then if I don't like that or the direction it's going, I take another picture of that. And then I use that new picture as a reference. And then I'm constantly moving and changing. And I can put acrylic paints allow you to like block in. Like, so if you don't like something, you can just totally take it out. You know, so that's basically the process.
Wow.
So that's, I don't know if that made any sense, but that's basically what I do.
Wow. I like that. I think that that's fascinating. And I think our listeners are going to start checking out those things and look into Procreate, for instance, on an iPad. I know my son's been talking about getting an iPad. He is designing skateboards right now. He's still in college, but he's interested in having a skateboard design business.
Oh yeah.
So he's looking at getting an iPad, and I mentioned your work to him. I'm going to be showing him your website and all of your stuff.
I could put one of my designs on his skateboards.
Yeah, he would probably love that.
And I also have time, like during my creative process, I make sure that my 10-year-old son, I have him in here as well. I have him do at least 30 minutes of like free drawing. Right. So I'll give him like a something to draw. And I'm a big proponent, even though like you'll see like these mystical kind of like things, the thing that's like makes you better as an artist, I believe, as like painting things that you see, even though you don't necessarily enjoy it as like if you're like more of an imaginative kind of like artist, like you, because that's me. I draw from like my head and my imagination. I found that like if I go and I literally sit and I make myself draw something I see, I find that the more imaginative work progresses. So I dive into both sides of the field, you know, and I feel like you progress a lot if you just do things that are like uncomfortable for you. And like I'll dabble in everything, cartoons, it doesn't matter. So I have my son come in here and he has this like little project, and like right now we're working on here, I can show you. We're working on roses. So I drew this right here, and like he drew these.
Wow. How old is he now?
He's 10.
He's 10.
He drew these. He actually drew this right up here, and he drew these two right here.
Wow.
And I traced over them with the marker, right? Because his lines were very, very loose. And I was trying to show him that like he was doing, because he was getting depressed. He was like, I'm not doing a good job. And like he was down on himself. And like I was like, no, you're really doing a great job. And I was trying to show him that his lines actually connect without him kind of like thinking about it. I was like, here, let me show you how your lines were connecting. And like so it's like a little bit of me, a little bit of him sort of. But I wanted him to know that he was doing a great job. Maybe he just didn't see it.
Wow. And loose is good. I mean, I think most of us, we endeavor to get loose and stop being restrictive with our artwork. So,
oh yeah. When you're tight, that's why like behind me immediately you see this abstract kind of thing. And like, I do more loose abstractions. And the moment I feel too tight in my work, like when I'm trying to like paint something specific and I want it to be like really good, the moment I feel like too restricted, I get the canvas off the easel and I put a plain one on there and I splash paint around and I do an abstraction. I let myself, I allow myself the freedom to loosen up, you know, and I that's why I don't like just doing a particular style. I love abstract work because it allows you the freedom to be loose and not have so many rules. And like you can tap into, that's where the sucker for abstraction came from, you know, like I was just getting too tight in the work. I just finished Rufus the rabbit, and I felt just so frustrated that I was just too focused and I just wanted to get it just right and all this stuff. And so after it was done, I was like, man, I gotta like, it's my way of like yoga in a way. I gotta stretch. I gotta like dance. And the only way you can dance is just put the paint on the brush and like just go at it, you know? And what came out of it was that painting. And it was awesome to be able to release that.
Absolutely. I think that's great.
So I think every artist should practice, in my opinion, but I think every artist should practice both sides. You know, I think as soon as you start feeling frustrated, get a canvas or a piece of paper, it doesn't matter. And just like make scribble marks and like let your mind just go back to childhood. You know what I mean? And like see what happens, because you don't really know. You don't know.
That's right. And that can be done in your sketchbook. I'm a big proponent of leaning on that sketchbook.
Oh, me too.
In a lot of ways, I think for me, it's really journaling, but it can be a place where you can practice both the technical things, right. So that you can just build up your eye-hand coordination. Even if you're not looking to paint something that is realistic, then when you get to that abstraction and you're feeling the pull to make a certain mark, that you're able to make the mark the way you want it, where you want it. I think you're right. It is advanced by practicing the hand-eye coordination of drawing something that is in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
I think so.
I definitely care. I do the sketchbook, but I find myself getting into that trap where, because my son does it too. I think he got it from me. It's the curse. But you'll take your sketchbook and you'll try to treat your sketchbook like it's the masterpiece. You know, like when you're drawing,
puke on it. Just puke on the canvas.
Like sketchbooks are, it's a personal, it can be not personal, but to me, it's a personal journal of my development. Right. And like it's a place that's meant for mistakes.
Right.
It's invented for the mistakes. The mistakes are like, that's what it's there for, right? It's a tool. You got to use it. So I nowadays, when I get in my sketchbook, I purposefully try to make all the mistakes that I can.
Good. Well, it is more, the sketchbook is more than a tool. It's your secret weapon.
Yeah.
It really is. And what I do is I will take things that are meaningful to me and then I put it all in my sketchbook and I just ripped it up, crinkled it up, whatever, and just made layers in my sketchbook so that I wasn't confronting blank pages. And then whenever it struck me, I could just draw right on top of it but it gave me that this is not a blank piece of paper, but then at the same time, it's meaningful. Mm-hmm. So there were layers to just making marks, and anything that went on top of that became meaningful to me.
I see a lot of this story in that piece that you sent me over the phone, now that you're talking about it. Yeah, I see a lot of this, like what you're explaining, like it's your journey kind of thing. I see it in that piece that you're with the dove, and like, you know, I see that.
Thank you.
So I think it shines in that. So I think like that's it could create powerful everything in our lives, right? You know, sort of like it's in the art. I mean,
it's all there.
It's there. But like, we know that, but like other people, like if they don't know the specifics, like the story, they can't like add up to why it got to that point, right?
Right.
So I think what you're explaining, I was just envisioning the work, you know what I mean? Like as you're explaining it, and I think real good work could come out of that. You know what I mean? It has already. And I think you should like draw from that. Keep going.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like every struggle is a success. So.
Yes. I like that. Every struggle is a success. Yeah. Because the journey of the struggle is building up your muscle, you know, your artistic voice.
Right. And I got like down and kind of depressed a few months back. And I'm like, oh, I'm not like, we all doubt ourselves, I think, as artists. And like, we're not real artists or blah, blah, blah. And then like, I was like, oh, it's not going anywhere. You know, and I was like, feeling mopey me, you know, and I was talking to my dad and he was like, well, okay, if it's not going anywhere, he's like, 5 years ago, did you have that much paint? And I said, no. And he's like, okay, 5 years ago, were you able to afford to buy a 5-foot canvas? I said, no. He said, 5 years ago, did you buy a house and you have a room to even paint in? And I said, no. He says, well, it looks to me like it's going somewhere. You know, so you don't really see, I guess, or like me, at least in my case, I didn't really see or the progression, but there is progression, you know, it might not be where you thought it was going to be, but it's happening. And as long as you put out the energy, I'm a big proponent on like, if I send out into the world this energy of I'm going to be something, or I'm going to, you know, or if you even have a specific, like my art's going to be in a museum, you have those like inner like voices and you put it out there. Right. And I think the world will respond. You know, I think I really do. I think that if you keep telling yourself, you know, and you believe it, that it's going to go somewhere and your art's going to touch somebody or a lot of people, it will happen. It just hasn't happened yet.
All right. So this is just super motivating and inspiring. Just everything that you're saying in your outlook is really motivating to me.
Right.
And by the way, if you get depressed again like that, call me.
Okay.
Okay. Just pick up the phone. Jacob.
Yeah. I don't know. I just, when I'm creating, I'm sure like you, the most important thing to me is just being able to put the color on the canvas. You know what I mean? It's not so much about like what it's going to look like as it is just letting my state of mind just flow. You know, I love my voice is not so much as even in the figures. I love bright colors, you know? I love having the variety of those and like a child, like, you know, when you're in a candy store and then you're like, oh my God, like, I think what you're attracted to most of is the color of the candy, right? Like if it was all like mushy gray, like if all the candy in the store was just one gray color, like nobody would be attracted to it. It has to be like bright and delicious. And like, you have to like want to eat it almost. So when I look at my paintings, to me, they're like bright and delicious, and they make me want to eat them almost, you know? I want to touch them, feel them, the texture, like you said, you know? When you go inside of like studios of other people's artwork, the first thing I want to do is go up to it and see the texture, you know what I mean? And I want to like touch it. You're not supposed to, I get that. But like, I want to. When I'm in the museum and I see like those little things on the painting, the cracks and anything, it doesn't matter. I instantly want to touch it, you know? And like, that's what I try to get that, like, I want to touch it moment on my paintings.
Yeah. You're going to have to put your stuff behind rope then. Cause I think it's fascinating and there's so much to see up close. People are going to be getting all up in that.
Yeah. And I think when artists, when we, you know what we're doing, right? When we're really close, we're stealing. When an artist is like really like inspecting the canvas, that's what we're doing. We're just a bunch of little thieves. And I think that's awesome. That's what I am. I'm like a little ninja in the night trying to like get my own creations out of someone else's, basically.
Well, and it's your own derivation of it. It's going to come out unique no matter what you're doing. I mean, unless you're doing an actual knockoff from a piece to sell as a counterfeit, it's going to be a la Jacob. It's not going to be somebody else's artwork.
Right. You can be inspired by somebody. I don't think you should literally steal somebody's work. Like, that would be bad. But like, I mean, obviously, but we all do it. We all look at works and we like truly get inspired by a certain, it could be a mark. It could be a color. It could be anything. It could be like the spirit of the painting. You know what I mean? And you want to capture that same sort of like, oh, moment. And it could be anything. It could be, you know, so that's when I say steal, I mean things like that.
Yeah, I get you.
So sorry, go ahead.
No, it's great. I'm just really glad that you're here.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it took a while.
It did. I know. We've been working on this for a while. Thank you for hanging in there with me. And like I said, I'm jazzed. I'm completely motivated and inspired by you. So I would love for you to wrap us up with the last word and tell us your best advice for artists who want to get their work out there. They want to get recognized and seen for what they create.
That's a good question. I think I'm still trying to figure that one out. I think that what you should do is just, like I said in the beginning, I think that you should truly and honestly believe in yourself. And then the first thing you should do is just tell yourself that you are good enough. And like, it will happen. And like, you know, and put the energy out there into the world and then believe it, not just like say it, like say it out loud, write it down, you know, stare it out on a wall. If you have to put it, sometimes I put postage notes. I write encouraging things on the postage notes, like, you know, believe in yourself or you're a great artist. And I put that on the window next to my easel so I can look at it, you know, believe in yourself and then put action to your belief. So actually make a plan to do something. Whether it's putting something in a coffee shop or asking your aunt to put it in her house, or it doesn't matter what it is, take a step and be brave.
This wraps up my interview with American painter, Jacob Bartanis. I hope his story and his outlook encourages you to pave your way forward as an artist according to your vision and what works best for you. Don't forget that in addition to my full masterclass, The Portrait Code, there are now 7 standalone spotlight classes for targeted training in design, composition, perspective, color theory, and anatomy, as well as a standalone portrait painting demonstration. Something for everyone. You can check them all out at PassionatePainterAcademy.com. Until next time, go make something.